I'm Matt Baum, and this is the Ministry of Hemp podcast, brought to you by ministryofhemp.com, America's leading advocate for hemp and hemp education. Hi, it's Matt Baum, and this is the Ministry of Hemp podcast. And today on the show, we're going to be talking to a small CBD topical producer that also works with an herb called comfrey. His name is Seth Hirsch. He has a small farm in the Catskills where he literally grows the hemp, mashes it up, and makes ointment out of it. Start to finish. He is controlling every step of the process and documenting those steps. And the government is giving him some trouble, and we're going to talk about that today. But first, before we get into that, I don't want to repeat myself here, but we need to talk about CBD and the coronavirus again. There currently is no cure for the coronavirus. I can't say that any other way. There is currently no cure for the coronavirus. And anyone that tells you that there is, whether it's a toothpaste, whether it's CBD, whether it's an herb, a spice, or even Western medicine, there is no cure out there. But there are a lot of companies that are trying to make money on your paranoia. They are trying to take advantage of you right now. The magazine Forbes just reported on a major spam campaign that hit hundreds of thousands of cell phones with a fake Fox News article that said that one mom has found the solution to fight back against a coronavirus outbreak. And it was, wait for it, CBD. Of course, this is completely false, and it is geared to separate the terrified, paranoid public from their money. And that's all it is. And you have to recognize this stuff for what it is. There's another company that was selling CBD infused hand sanitizer. Does it sanitize your hands? Probably. But is the CBD doing anything? No. And it's certainly not fighting the coronavirus. With a global pandemic like this, of course, there is a huge movement to boost your immune system. And there are a million herbal and nutritional supplement companies out there saying that they can boost, strengthen your immune system, or balance your immune system, or whatever clever word they're using to make your immune system superhuman. And lots of them have CBD included as well. The hard news is there is no good way to boost your immunity system. Your best defense right now is to wash your hands and stay quarantined. That is it. There's no real good news here. This will pass. It's going to. But CBD, herbal and nutritional supplements, are not the answer. Do not waste your money. And do not spread this kind of misinformation, because it does nothing. It does nothing but scare people and make them spend money on what is essentially snake oil. I'm going to say this one more time. And this is coming from a podcast that is here to educate and promote the benefits of hemp and CBD. It does not cure the coronavirus, and there is no easy answer to this right now. And anyone that tells you differently is a liar. One of the things CBD can do is help with pain. We've talked about it extensively on this show. Today, I'm talking with Seth Hirsch of Catskills Comfrey. As you'll hear in the interview, comfrey is an herb that helps with pain and cellular regeneration, and it only seemed natural for him to start mixing CBD with that as well after he discovered that it relieved him and his wife of the pain that they had been living with. He's the founder and head farmer as well. Seth is a small purveyor out of the Catskills in New York, trying to make his way in this new, gigantic business. And I hope you enjoy the conversation we had about growing hemp, producing his ointment, and the difficulties of trying to follow the law and just find someone that will process your credit card payments. So, Seth, give me a little background on you first. How did you get into this business?
I got into it through a practical matter. I have trigger finger. Trigger finger, if you're not familiar, is where your finger is locked. It's a common problem, often with musicians, where you have repetitive motion. And I have been seeking a solution, literally a solution, like people were suggesting salts from aquariums and things like this. Nothing worked. And I read about comfrey, and overnight, I mean, the impact on my trigger finger, loosening up of the fingers, the duration, the intensity, discomfort was a herbal remedy, and it was a very impactful, and it was very obvious. And I said, boy, a lot of people must be suffering from this. Let me make an ointment. My wife, too, had broken, sprained her pelvis, which is very painful.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And she couldn't sleep, and we, this is actually the initial account. She was a herbologist, and we got some comfrey. And that night, she did a poultice, and that night, she was able to sleep again. So it was obvious to us, I mean, anecdotally at least, that there was some benefit here. And that's how I started growing. We have a small farm up here, about 8 acres in the Catskills. And it's ideal for growing comfrey. We've probably got 400 plants in the ground now, plus some other medicinals we're growing, arnica, calendula, and this year, last year at least, started with hemp.
So let me ask you, we talk mainly hemp on this show, but what is comfrey? I've never heard of it until I bumped into you.
Comfrey is a plant. If you are into cosmetology and you look on the ingredient list of many cosmetics, you will see an active ingredient called allantoin. Allantoin is associated often in conversations with collagen, anti-aging benefits.
Okay.
The demand by the cosmetic industry is so huge that they manufacture allantoin synthetically. The comfrey plant is a natural source of allantoin. It's called knit bone. It's a cell proliferant, actually. The active ingredient allantoin is known to be a cell proliferant. It encourages cell growth. So there's many, many skin conditions and bones, for example, if they're broken. What do you need to mend them? You need new cells.
Sure.
And comfrey enhances the body's ability to create.
I had a little audio glitch there, but Seth was saying that comfrey has been shown to help the body in new cell growth. So where did the idea come from to start growing hemp and mixing that with the comfrey? Is that, that's got to be relatively new.
Running around New York State a couple years ago, selling my ointments, the three originals that are non-CBD, I kept running into these stores, these wellness stores, that were saying, oh, and I would see the signs for CBD, and some people would say, hey, you ought to do a CBD thing. So I started looking into it, and I saw the benefits complemented what comfrey offers. Comfrey's anti-inflammatory. CBD's an anti-inflammatory.
Sure.
Comfrey is great for sore muscles and joint pain. CBD is good for, relieving muscle and joint pain. It's supposedly good for rashes. Comfrey is great for rashes because it helps create new cells where the cells have died on the surface of the skin. So it became a kind of, hey, let's do this. And I started looking around for a source of CBD to mix in with the ointments that I'm making, the comfrey, the arnica, the calendula, coming up with various formulations. So that was the impetus. It's worked out pretty good.
So what's the growing season like on hemp? Is it the same as comfrey? I mean, hemp is a great big giant plant, and on your site, it looks like comfrey is kind of a cute little green guy.
Well, there's a lot of, you dry the comfrey leaves. The main source of what I do for the ointments is I recover the allantoin from the large leaves of the comfrey plant. Yes, the plant is small. They actually grow quite large after a few years. In fact, they had told me to do two foot spacing or 2.5 foot spacing, and I didn't listen to people.
That's like tomato plant spacing. That's pretty big.
Yeah, but they have now filled in the space. I mean, the leaves touch and these plants. So you cannot get rid of it. You have to be very careful of planting comfrey, but you just can't get rid of it, which is one of the benefits. It has a very, very deep root.
Okay.
And he just keeps on going down and down to draw in nutrients.
It's an annual, so, though. It comes back every year?
Oh, yeah. With much vigor, more vigor every year. So that's good because, you know, it has minimal care. You give it a shovel full of manure every year, horse manure, and he loves it. that in the soil up here seems to be ideal. I've had no problem, minimal care. I mean, the main thing is just harvesting it, drying it, you know, crushing it,
right,
storing it, infusing it. It's not the growing aspect. It's pretty minimal care for that.
I assume the process that you're talking about is very similar for the hemp as well.
Well, yes. I mean, you have different, perhaps, ground requirements, but hemp grows very, very easily. We were blown away with the yield last year. We were actually taken aback when we got into it. What we had done, I had secured actually a local supply of excellent hemp, distillate, CBD distillate, about an hour away from here.
Mm-hmm.
I had been searching all over the country a couple years ago, you know, when it first started taking off. And eventually, you know, think global, act local. I acted locally and found a great hemp High Falls extracts an hour from here. They supplied me with my first batch of distillate. And then I had the idea at the end of the year, why don't I grow it? So we had been getting along pretty well, High Falls and myself, and they agreed to give me a plot of land and let me grow under their license. New York State has some rather rigorous CBD laws now. They've enacted along with the hemp bill like a lot of other states. So he had a license. I grew under that about a half an acre, which is a lot of plants for someone like myself. But I'm only growing for my own use. I'm growing to use in the ointments. I quickly discovered last year that you don't make money if you're small trying to sell into a hemp market.
That was my next question, actually. Like the challenges of not to poke any fun, but you're a little guy. You're doing a smaller business. How are you surviving on this? Is this a living? Like, are you able to survive?
Well, I am retired, and I'm trying to grow the business. Finally, the hemp, I mean, it's been a curious case of obstacles along the way.
Right.
And the hemp, the CBD ointments that I have two now. One's I call it CBD, and then there's a CBD premium, which is a high potency one that is doing very well also. But along the way, New York State decided to get involved. And the very day that I was applauding the New York State efforts, they advised me that, hey, you can't infuse your products. I use the infusion process to move the active ingredients from the hemp buds along with the comfrey, the arnica, the calendula, the other herbs I'm using. I use the infusion process. Well, New York State didn't recognize it in their hemp bill. And they were saying, well, that's illegal. You can't do that.
So,
and that kind of.
Out of curiosity, what did they recognize? What would they have said was legal?
Well, the traditional commercial.
Sure.
Ethanol and the carbon dioxide extraction methods.
Right. Multi-million dollar chemistry extraction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, the author of the hemp bill, I've met with the senator in New York State recently or talked over the phone with their office, and they were very receptive to the little guys like myself, the small farmers.
That's cool.
Because they wanted to help the farmers. This was an avenue, but the way the restrictions, there's three things. You can be a manufacturer, you can be a processor, you can be a grower. Now, I've applied for my grower's license this year. Apparently, I'll get my own independent license, but I can't process it. They won't sell me a processor license.
Why? Well, what are they afraid of? I don't understand. So you can grow it, you can process it, but you can't grow it and process it. That's the issue.
Yeah, well, they're not issuing any more processor license, they say. Oh. They don't give me much of a reason. Apparently, 50 or 60 have been let. And my resource who's telling me behind the scenes is saying there's really only four companies that have all those 60 licenses. So it's a case of the big boys controlling the market and precluding, you know, small people like myself from just infusing small batches and doing these niche products.
Is it cost prohibitive? What is it like? What's the licenses like, a grower's license? Let's start there.
No, they're rather fair. It's $500.
Oh, that's nothing.
Right, exactly. That's good for an acre or 100 acres. You know? Oh. So they've been fair about that. And the processor license also is that at that rate. But it's the restrictions and the regulations and all this just preclude, you know, the practical ability of somebody like myself to secure one.
So I just saw on your site, like very recently, you also had Stripe, who was processing your credit card sales, just dropped you. Did they give you a reason? Any reason why?
Well, of course, Yeah, it was kind of abrupt. I mean, I got an email at 9 in the morning, and I was out, and my thing was disconnected, my account, my credit card processing account. And they just said and I complained because I said, hey, you've been processing my account for 6 months. You know, I've been making sales, and they gave no reason, one email, and said, you're out of here. Thank you. They didn't even thank me.
That's sweet of them.
you're out of here, and you're on your own. And I literally was. Is now my processor, which is okay. I'm not crazy about it. PayPal has a similar restriction. But right now they have it discovered me.
Well, we'll keep it quiet on our side. I won't tell them anything.
you can bleep that out.
No problem.
But I'm trying to secure, but that becomes a major task, because rather than my template Squarespace, I have a Squarespace template
right
to run the website. They don't even allow a third. They have Stripe and they have Square and PayPal.
Yeah.
Forget trying to put somebody else in there. So I'm having to rebuild the site around that problem.
They have contracts with them is what they have, basically. So they say,
oh, is that it?
Yeah. You play in our yard, you play with these people, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So that's been frustrating to kind of get back up and smoothly running. So
Sure.
It's a constant challenge when you're small. You don't have the basis, you know, the benefits of scale.
Yeah.
You may be able to see that I'm retired, but you know, we started this business back up. I'm 70 plus years old, and last year we had the 500 plants. That was way more than I could handle.
That's amazing. Was it just you?
Or? Well, no, I had some people come in and help.
Okay.
Some other geezers came in.
I'm picturing this like retirement community farm kind of.
Well, we didn't do the traditional route in farming. I'm not a traditional farmer. I had worked for a farm organization 5 prior years before I retired as a database administrator. But my wife and I, we've been growing the conference. We had growing other things, and that was working out. So when we jumped into the hemp, I had a little bit of experience and kind of knew what to expect. But when the plants started coming in, they were big and they were healthy and they had a lot of buds.
Yeah.
And harvest, we were running out of space in our barn. We had, at the end of the season, we had stuff hanging everywhere.
I'm sure.
inside the barns. So it was a good learning experience. But yes, it is very, very labor intensive. Now I'm cutting way back. The market is glutted up here.
Right. Everywhere.
There's no way, I'm sure everywhere. So I'm just kind of literally focusing on this year, cutting way back on the number of plants to about 80 plants, and really growing some monster plants with great yield and quality on those 80, so I can focus on them. That will reduce my labor costs. Keeps me outdoors, which I enjoy.
Sure.
And so it should work out to the better this year as you learn and you play better.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure you've looked into this, and I'm just spitballing here. I'm not trying to solve your problem. But like at the end of the year, when you have all this hemp hanging and there's a glut in the market, there's literally nowhere you can go with it. You can't sell it to anyone else. You can't give it to the processors and be like, take this off my hands. Or,
well, I did. I did contact some processors to say, well, what can I do with this poundage I've got? And yes, they would have taken it, but the rate of converting it was high.
I'm sure.
So you have the processing fee, which by the time I turned it into a couple of kilos of distillate, you know, I had added a significant amount of cost.
Yeah.
My whole marketing plan now is, you know, I'm trying to build up demand, of course, to use and add value to the product.
Right.
That's the only viable route for me is I do my ointments. Let's add some CBD to it. I make a good product and hope that somehow, the gods of marketing will shine upon me and increase my throughput, you know, of the CBD. And that would make it viable. And then I see a route to using what I'm producing. Until that happens, there's really, you lose money. Last year I went out into the market, I kind of checked the market and said, what can I get for this stuff? And I wouldn't even cover the fence I had put in last year to guard the half acre. So, you know, it was just a realistic thing. I went into this with eyes wide open and realized that between my buddy and at High Falls and myself talking, that the price was going to drop. We knew that.
Right.
But still, it was kind of a shock to see that, you know, I wouldn't even be able to recover some basic expenses trying to sell into a farmer's market.
Ugh.
So
you said you've been talking to legislatures in New York and they have been listening. Is there hope here? Do you think you're getting through to them?
No, I think we are. Well, there was a unbeknownst to me, another associate of mine who I work with up in another a village up here has a feed store, and he was complaining to them independently of me. I didn't know this, and he had a very good conversation with them as well. And they do seem receptive to the idea that the little guys want to play too.
Right.
That we should be allowed to participate in the benefits also. And they recognize the infusion process, the how it's processed. That they understood that.
That kind of blows my mind that they would look at the infusion process specifically, which basically no chemicals. No ethanol, no chance of anything exploding. You're literally putting ground up leaves into oil and letting the oil take the good stuff out, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a very age old, you know, centuries old process that really promotes.
What is the problem? I don't understand. Like, that's the thing. When you get into legislation like this, this is what blows my mind. I get when we're worried and they say, well, we don't know what this is and there's no proof behind it and we're afraid it's marijuana. We can teach people that. But then you're stuck with stupid legislation like this. It's saying you can't steep the leaves in oil. I mean, that's mind blowing.
Yeah, they get it when you say, what do you do when you steep a tea bag? They finally get what all of it is about.
Right.
And they become a bit more receptive. And yes, it is. I told them, I said, look, it's not going to get cleaner because you send it out to the ethanol people.
Mm-hmm.
Or extract it that way. I test my stuff regularly with certificates. I do it a lot. And you know, these little $50 increments of testing add up for a little guy.
Oh, yeah.
But we do it frequently, and my test is just as valid as a big boy's. It's the same processing, you know, the testing facility. So there might be some understanding there. I'd like to think so. When I tell them about the entourage effect and the full spectrum aspect, they kind of understand and the chain of integrity of being able to say, well, I know where my CBD comes from.
Right.
My upper pasture. They start to understand and it may be a bit more helpful as we move forward. It's a simple matter. They just didn't address the infusion method. So it might be possible to do an amendment that says the infusion process is exempted. Something like this. I don't know what form it may take, if it will take at all, but they did listen. I thought we were on the phone a good while.
So he was just literally left off the page, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, the bill was probably written by some big boys,
yeah.
And they said this is the main process is if you're doing 100 acres and 10 acres of stuff, you need a commercial process.
Sure.
You know, my process is, in a sense, is commercial on a small scale. It's not commercial across the United States. It doesn't scale. I can't do 100 pounds at a time.
Right.
So it
just seems like there are
alive.
There's farmers in your same area that are pasteurizing goat milk and making cheese and producing food that could kill people if you do it wrong. And you're making an ointment. You know what I mean?
Well, curiously, I wonder how curious it is, but the FDA has never, in all my readings, specifically come out and referenced topical applications, which is what an ointment is.
Right.
They kind of leave it unsaid, unmentioned in all these discussions. They'll talk about ingestibles. They'll talk about oil.
Sure.
Anything that's going into your body, they want to address, and as do all the other health organizations. But topicals are pretty much left off to the side and on their own. So I'm optimistic that that is the case, that they will remain that way without, burdensome regulations or just a killer for people like
right.
Myself. I mean, it's not like we're trying to make a lousy product or skirt the rules or anything, but the scale of what we do limits a practical, application of all these things that the big boys have to go
through. Sure. So do you regret it at all? Is there part of you that says, man, everything was fine. We were growing comfrey. It was kicking ass. And now I get into this hemp crap and you have got to be kidding me.
Well, no, that's a good question. but it's never crossed my mind. You know, it's actually fun. I enjoy growing the plants and seeing these things. I know what a healthy plant looks like. It has been a real challenge. One of my blogs is about the challenge we got into last year for, you know, undertaking this. I was going to say that we're not a traditional farm. You come to my place, we've got 8 acres. It used to be a dairy farm here. Back in the day, you know, this could support people. Nowadays, 8 acres won't do it,
right,
in terms of dairy. But there's no tractors on this property. I went in and augered out each of the 500 holes with a, you know, a big auger, an 18-inch augered hole. You know, refilled the holes with improved soil.
Wow.
Although the soil was quite good, I didn't have to add very much. I had it assayed, and it was excellent soil for growing hemp anyway. But still, you know, that intensive labor or work, the first year I invested a lot, fencing, irrigation,
sure,
getting these holes prepared, and harvesting 500 plants. Was a bit of a load, but no, I don't think I've ever grazed. I'm getting great stories. I meet lots of people, and you know, it keeps me out in the street.
Yeah,
you know, it appears to be keeping me healthy. In these specific times, you know, we're talking right in the midst of the coronavirus issue.
Yeah, not a bad idea to get outside and get a little exercise. I mean, keep your distance from others, but you know, good.
Well, the thing that I laugh about up here, it's not a laughing matter by any means, but I say my lifestyle has barely changed. We live in a very rural area.
Yeah.
I've got some neighbors on the other side of my rock wall, a quarter mile away. There's nobody around. So we were out the other day, you know, working on the beds, working on the fields. So, you know, self-isolation or sheltering in place is kind of no different to me than I was, you know, 2 months ago.
You were socially distant before it was cool.
Yeah, right.
So you keep saying this is a non-traditional farm, and you went out and you augered all these holes on your own. Seth, why? Why do you choose to do it this way?
Well, you know, I mean, to bring a farm, the area we had was small. I mean, a half acre is small to a farmer. I just didn't want to get involved ripping up that pasture up at the top. I looked at it and said, hey, my associate was putting soil into these big pots, you know, I forget how big these pots are, and growing these monster hemp plants.
Right.
That he used to produce his clones. And I said to myself, man, if you could grow these hemp plants inside these big pots, these giant pots, I could put it in the ground and grow it.
Sure.
So that was the impetus, and that was, you know, how I approached it. I think it was a good decision. It keeps it on a scale that's manageable. This year, I'm really going to be able to focus on watering. I have a natural water spring that comes down from a half a mile up the side of the mountain here.
It sounds like you live in Hobbiton. It sounds beautiful.
Well, it is nice. I mean, the Catskills is really, I'm very blessed here. We've got water, flowing water, in addition to a 500-foot well. It's some of the best water I've ever drunk in my life. So the fact that we had the running water and it allows us to run the gardens was a real blessing. And I focus that directly on the 500 plants. And I'm not convinced I was really getting the pressure I needed, even though I had a good head on it, about 60 foot ahead. By the time it got down and gets distributed into the different zones, you know, I'm not so sure it was really that effective getting the fertilizer out. So now with 80 plants, you know, I can really manually do it and have a nice time, a peaceful time doing it, and really making sure each plant gets, you know, powerful fertilizers and all the attention it kind of needs.
Seth, I appreciate you coming on the show. This has really been great, and I'm rooting for you 100%. It's so funny because there seems like in the United States right now, farmers markets get bigger and bigger and bigger, and people are more concerned with where their food is coming from. And like you said, thinking locally and buying locally, but for some reason, the government wants to get in the way of hemp and CBD doing the same thing, even though guys like you are trying to do it the right way, the hard way and the right way, I might add.
Yeah, it's, I'm patient. You know, I've been doing this, so I feel I'm on the right course. It doesn't feel wrong. If something's not right, it's wrong. I think this is right. And I feel that it'll work out. I get people happy that they're using my products, and that's a nice blessing in itself.
Yeah.
I certainly haven't gotten applause in the bank account yet, but the applause comes through with people who say thank you and nice job and appreciate you making these appointments. So that's gratifying.
Well, I'm pulling for you. I hope the money comes soon here, okay? I mean, applause is great. Don't get me wrong. It's nice to have people say thank you.
Well, it's also nice to, you know, they say thank you with a deposit and a purchase.
So. Exactly. You heard a bleep during this interview, and that's because I didn't want Seth to expose who was actually processing his credit cards right now in case he gets in trouble. And that's how ridiculous this business is. That's the state that we're in. This is completely legal. The 2018 Farm Bill made hemp and CBD completely legal in the United States. But it's still very difficult for people to find credit card processing because everyone is waiting to see what happens next. I've talked about it on this show before, but hopefully with new banking legislation that is coming, we will see this change so people like Seth don't have to go through this headache for doing the job the right way. And as always, I will have links to Catskills Comfrey in the show notes for this episode. That brings us to the end of another episode of the Ministry of Hemp podcast. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Seth. And again, you can find those links to Catskills Comfrey in the show notes, along with links to an article on ministryofhemp.com about why CBD can't cure or prevent COVID-19 and why so many hemp brands are claiming that it can. I didn't mean to get negative or scary, but we have to be serious about this. And if we want to promote the real scientific benefits behind hemp and CBD, then we have to focus on the science and separate out the garbage. And if you believe in this message and you believe in the power of hemp to change the friggin' world, and it really can, I honestly believe that, please become a patron of ministryofhemp.com and help us to spread this message. You can go to Patreon and search ministryofhemp.com. Any amount you donate makes you a Ministry of Hemp insider and gets you all kinds of benefits like podcast extras. And on this week's podcast extra, I am talking to Seth about how he actually makes his ointment from start to finish. It's very cool, and I hope you get a chance to check it out. At the Ministry of Hemp, we believe that a more accessible world is a better world. So there is a complete written transcript of this show in the show notes of every episode as well. I hope all of you are staying healthy and keeping sane during your quarantine period. I know having a podcast helps give me something to do, and I hope listening to this helps give you some normalcy in your life. There's a fantastic DJ on KEXP out of Seattle, and his name is John, and he hosts the morning show, and every day he says, "You are not alone." And every day he does it, I get a little misty. I really do, and I hope you guys know that you're not alone either. We're all going through this together, and we are going to get through it. We just have to be smart about it. So let's remember we are all in this together. Remember to take care of yourself. Remember to take care of others, and make good decisions, will you? This is Matt Baum with the Ministry of Hemp podcast, signing off.